Washington, July 1st. Just a moment, I'll tell you what we're thinking about here today.
From Washington, the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations present Barkage with his midday summary of Washington and world news. Before Mr. Barkage tells the story of today's news, here's an announcement of interest to all of us. When is a guest not a guest, but a host? No, we're not talking riddles. We're talking about the Paul Whiteson Club. Paul MC's every hour-long recorded session of hit tunes in the club and interviews many of the country's musical celebrities. The interviews will be held in the homes of the artists, and thereby catching them in the surroundings in which they're most relaxed and ready to tell the most interesting stories of their careers. Paul's guests, therefore, will actually be his hosts. Paul has known and worked with most of these top guys and gals in the musical world. He's launched lots of them on successful careers, so naturally he knows lots of fascinating anecdotes about them. Paul also plays the songs they first introduced, some of the oldies and a lot of the current favorites as well. So don't miss one session of the Paul Whiteman Club when it's heard today over most of these ABC stations. And now, here is Mr. Barkage.
Barkage talking. It's very hot and muggy here, and it's hard to believe that this has been a spring and summer plagued with storms and rains and tornadoes and floods elsewhere. But the weather will know it, and he's had a lot of letters asking him if this season is ushering in a new style of weather for permanent style. He says no. He's Mr. Tannehill, the chief forecaster, and nor is it due to the atom bomb, as many people think. The laboratory tests, he says, at Bikini last year show no effect whatever from the A-bomb explosion. But some people insist that there may be things about the atom not yet learned. However, the present illogical weather conditions all have logical explanations according to the meteorologist. The Mississippi, which has reached the highest flood stage in the St. Louis area in 103 years, is still rising, and thousands more people are being evacuated from their homes. Today, we seem to have hit a dead center in several main developments. What may have been the last Paris Economic Conference is just about over, I imagine. We're waiting for the next step. I did hope to bring in Mr. Sturdivant, the ABC's Paris correspondent, but he was in a press conference. If it's over, perhaps we'll get him before I'm through. We're waiting, too, to see whether the rumored concession on the part of the northern coal operators has really been made. It hasn't been denied that the offer to meet John Lewis's demands in full has been made by some of the big eastern groups. Others said the subject had merely been under discussion with the operators. Meanwhile, the men will be on vacation until next Tuesday. Taking for granted that unless there's some basis of a negotiation reached or that the men come back themselves, which of course is unlikely, Secretary of Labor Schwellenbach will step in. His conciliation service will offer its services, but on August 22nd, a new federal mediation and conciliation service becomes operative. The shipyard strike has spread now. Threatens a shutdown of virtually all major shipbuilding and repair work on the Atlantic coast. Speaking of strikes, other side of the picture, I've been very much interested in these letters that have been coming into me mentioning firms and unions which get on without strikes. Letters in response to the mention, you may remember I made, of the proposed study of labor relations to be made by the National Planning Association. It's the tone, really, of these letters that has impressed me. Take this one, for instance. It comes from a man in a firm 70 years old. I mean, the firm is 70 years old. He says that firm knows how to get along with people. He says one of the best money makers in the nation with a volume which approaches $100 million. They make these profits, he says, because not a single worker has to take time out to find out if he's being treated right. He knows he is. And he uses all his time concentrating on the job. He knows that the company uses the profits in such a way that during the terrible depression after 1929, not a single worker was let out, even though there was nothing for him to do but to go through the motions of cleaning up his department several times a day. And here's another letter from the president of a union, a local, and he writes with real pride about the plan. He says, we, of course, have our differences, but with each side giving a little, we've cleared the table and walked away friends. All their troubles, he said, were settled that way. Another letter from the financial secretary of a union mentioning his firm and saying that he could give many such cases where harmonious relations exist. I quote these letters to show the enthusiasm these writers, both the union and the management, the employees, the management end, show in wishing to reveal the other side of the better side of the labor management picture. I can see now how the National Planning Association chose this method of approach, of making studies of the successes rather than the failures. I think it'll be worth seeing when it comes out. Another investigation, which might be interesting, though not so much on the hopeful side, is the one the president suggested in his message on rent controls he sent to Congress yesterday, sent just too late for me to report on. The president in that message talked about the brazen operations of the real estate lobby. He urged Congress to investigate them. Well, that brought a storm of controversy. Naturally, it would in a political year, also when a strong group like that with a lot of good, strong supporters in Congress is singled out. What interested me was that although Senator Bricker, Republican of Ohio, sprang to the defense of the real estate people, labeled the president's reference demagoguery, Senator Taft, Republican, also from Ohio, said he wouldn't mind doing that investigation himself. And so that rather lifted the discussion out of partisan politics. Taft, of course, had made quite a study of housing, and while he didn't elaborate his statement that he'd like to investigate the real estate lobby, it was pointed out that last week, in addressing a Fight for Housing rally, Taft said that misrepresenting and misleading propaganda about his proposed housing program had been distributed to members of Congress of the Home Builders and the Real Estate Association. A spokesman for the National Association of Real Estate Boards said his organization was just as legitimate a group as the farm or the labor group. Now, for an announcement, I'll be back with more news and comment in just a moment.
Pick up today's newspaper, then compare its weight with 5,700,000 tons of newsprint. That's the amount of newsprint that could be made out of the timber lost annually to forest fires in pre-war years. During the war, the damage done by forest fires decreased because gas rationing and longer working hours prevented many Americans from making automobile trips. You see, 90% of all forest fires are started not by natural causes, but by our carelessness. Now that restrictions preventing weekend trips have ended, it's up to us to see that lumber so necessary in reconversion and housing isn't wasted. When walking in wooded areas, always stamp out cigar, cigarette, and pipe ashes. Break matches in two after using. Drown all campfires with water, stir the ashes, and drown again. And last, look up the local laws before using fire. Observe these rules, and you'll be helping conserve. Now here again is Forkage with his commentary on the news.
Well, I'm sorry to say that our Paris correspondent has apparently not left that press conference yet. I don't know what he's waiting for. It may be bad news. This conference, the fourth one, which many people thought might be the last, started with a deadlock. It may be that some communique is going to be issued on the subject, and of course it may be that they've found some means of compromise to continue. But Molotov had virtually vetoed the plan, as I said yesterday, and Secretary Bevin and Foreign Minister Beto were about ready to proceed in continental economic planning on their own hook. The French press said Beto would attempt to save the conference today with a compromise. Whether he was able to do so or not, we ought to know very shortly, but not at this moment. Both the British and the French circles said that only a miracle could save the conference. The French forces, sources even predicted that today's session would surely be the last. The official French press agency said that after a final meeting, the communique would be issued. Whether or not that's the one we're considering now or not, I don't know. The ministers were there formally, theoretically, to consider the plan that Molotov had proposed answering Secretary of State. I mentioned that yesterday. The French predicted that Beto would immediately ask the French cabinet, perhaps this morning, it's the afternoon there now, to proceed on the basis of Marshall's offer without the Soviet participation. If this is true, if Russia has really split away, it will, of course, mean that she probably thinks that she's politically strong enough so that she can get along without the economic help, and also politically strong enough within so that she can resist any ill will that might be built up in the satellite countries who certainly want the economic aid. Perhaps, indeed, that she's weak within politically and doesn't risk the lifting of the Iron Curtain that might mean. Or perhaps she thinks she's strong militarily. Also, there's a possibility the Russians may think that the isolationists in this country will block the plan to aid Europe anyhow, or that we'll move too slowly, or that that dearly hoped for depression will wipe out our whole capitalistic system. That would and leave Russia so strong that her communism could dominate Europe. France is, of course, in a precarious position. Ramadier has thus far been able to hold his cabinet together, shown much greater strength than one would expect under the circumstances without communist cooperation. He's had the strikes. He's had the expose of this reactionary's plot. That probably would help him. Now, however, he's got to weather the effects of a debate on economic policy in the National Assembly. There'll be a vote of confidence probably on Friday. To Italy's other troubles was added the effects of a terrific explosion of ammunition, which was being moved by the Italian Navy under the peace treaty. Late this morning, the White House furnished some news, too. There was another sharply critical message from the president accompanying the signing under protest of what he called the grossly inadequate funds provided for the tax collection. There is now a backlog, he said, of 30,000 suspected tax evaders to be investigated. And the present bill means the discharging of between 4,000 and 5,000 employees. The president also signed legislation making the United States a member of the International Refugee Organization, which he said would give the world a new reason to believe that no problem is too difficult for solution by cooperating nations. Certainly that's is one of the major problems in Europe today, a displaced person. This organization will be under the United Nations. Its activities will be directed by a nine-member executive committee. The immediate job is to take care of some 900,000 displaced persons in Europe. Although we make a heavy contribution to this cost, it will mean shifting a part of the burden that's now borne by the American military government in Germany. President Truman will drive to Charlottesville, Virginia, Thursday to speak at Jefferson's home, Monticello, on the 4th of July. But White House aide William Hassett will not accompany him on this trip because he's in the hospital recovering from a sudden and what we hope and believe is just a temporary illness. We were rather worried over him last night, but he's reported much better this morning. In fact, he ordered his own position and me to get back home and go to work. Hassett has a tough Irish-Yankee constitution. That's all, and thanks very much. And here's a friendly word from your announcer.
Here's the date you'll want to jot down in your radio musical calendar. Tonight, over most of these ABC stations, we'll present the Boston Pops in its first Esplanade concert broadcast of the season. As music lovers know, these concerts are given from a beautiful setting alongside the historic Charles River. Thousands of Bostonians and tourists listen under the open skies as the Pops Orchestra plays from the huge shell, upon the steps of which can be seen the names of the great composers. Hundreds of small boats float lazily by on one side, while on the other side one sees Boston's traditional red brick houses. In the background stands the famous Longfellow Bridge. And it's amid this varied setting that Arthur Fiedler directs the Boston Pops Orchestra in the music of the masters. Don't miss the Boston Pops Esplanade Concert tonight over most ABC stations. Balkage will be heard tomorrow at this time over most of these stations with his personalized summary of Washington and the world news. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.